Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
The McNeil and Parkin Show. Afternoons on the Score.
Well, it's unfortunate that he wanted to stick to 39, man, and you know, pan out the career he had right now. But, you know, obviously that's a cool number. And you know, he'll say the same. But, you know, it's going to be a little different being another number, man. I've always prided myself on that. Was the number that they gave to me. You know, and I'll never forget when I got the number, I was just like, man, what is this number? This is terrible. Like, I'm a DB with 39. And, you know, I wore it with a badge of honor, man. You know, it's part of me. So, obviously, it's going to be a little different. You know, so I'm going to try to come close to 39 as I possibly can. So, the 3-8 might have to. It's gonna be the situation for this year, obviously. But you know, that coming to grips to that was tough, man. That's my baby right there, 39. So, you know, that's how I feel. What made me, but you know, it's all fun and games, man. Obviously, I'm just excited to have this opportunity, man. And you know, he made that number a cool number in Chicago. Obviously, tip my hat to him. And you know, 38 and 39 back there rocking. 38 can't be too bad. 38 can't be too bad.
The McNeil and Parkin Show on 670 The Score.
That's Deshaun Gibson. 38. You got to do 38. You can't ask Eddie Jackson for 39. He's the highest paid safety in the NFL. Deshaun Gibson's not going to be there, man.
Wow, that's a lot of words devoted to your jersey number. You know, as a guy who likes jersey numbers, I'm here for it. I like it. But hopefully that's the worst of things that can happen for Deshaun Gibson this spring, coming to grips with the reality that he's not going to get 39. I'm going to have to come to grips with it. Yes, you are.
Hey, man, this stuff means a lot to people.
It sure does. Yeah, well, they are going to be a deadly combination, Jackson and Gibson with a P. So get used to that. Rekindling memories of the Bear when the Bears had safeties. We trusted safeties who would come up with takeaways and big hits and stop the run. Play physically in the box. Deshaun Gibson, your 38 is ready, sir. Fill it up and impress us.
I love the idea, too, of like, he's like, all right, I'm going to sign there. They're offering me the most money. It's a good defense. But damn. I can't ask Eddie Jackson for that number. He's younger than me, but he's better than me, and I can't do it. So he settles in right at 38. But you said that there was a passionate debate happening about Tua Tagovailoa. Excuse me, I'm always going to mess that one up.
Good luck. Just go Tua. It's easier.
Yeah, but I should know it. I mean, it's he's awesome, and he was going to the Dolphins, but he is choosing jersey number one, going to the Raptors, but going to the Dolphins because he can't wear number 13 because a quarterback by the name of Marino already did that for the Dolphins.
Yes, and that number is retired, and there was discussion on Good Morning Football today, and I saw some online buzz for it as well as to whether it is the right thing to do, because Tua, and I'll get the last name before the season starts and have it committed to memory too, but right now he's just Tua to me. Tua wore 13 at Alabama, yes? So he would like to wear 13. I don't think, the impression I got was he didn't want to make this an issue and would have liked to have worn the 13, but he wasn't going to ask Dan Marino to allow him to wear it. And then debate ensued as to whether that's a classy gesture on the Hall of Famer's part to say, hey, go ahead. We know you've said, you know, maybe he should have said something before you pick a number if you want to wear your college number. Based on everything you've accomplished, your first-round pick, I don't care if you wear it. That's up to the individual. Mike Singletary green-lighted it here on his number 50. I don't know if Marino would say, yeah, go ahead and do it. I think that's the classy thing to do. I don't think you do it for just any stumble bum. You pick up a guy who's floated around in free agent. You know, you don't do it for those guys. But for guys who are supposed to be changing the fortunes of your franchise, a Heisman Trophy winner, a guy who's won a national championship, those are guys you say, yeah, time for somebody else to shine in this number. I think it's classy when athletes do that. They don't have to, but that's nice. And at some point, you got to say, give someone else a chance, right? You know, I want to go to my grave not seeing anybody else wear this number. That sounds very Bob Greasy-like to me or other members of the 72 Dolphins. The Tua number one jersey, that's what some of the debate was this morning, too. And this appeals to younger guys more than it does the old farts like me. But the number one Tua jersey with the Dolphins, they're expecting it to be a really good war between the Burrow Bengals jersey, the Brady Bucks jersey, and Tua in number one in Miami colors. Those three jerseys are expected to have a colossal battle this year to the top of the NFL heap. And if they're sold at sporting goods stores, if they're purchased online at NFL Shop, 32 teams share the revenue. If they're sold on premise, the team gets to keep the money. That's why some smart teams have a gift shop, for those who still do those sort of things in normal times, rather than using NFL.com or something like that. They have a shop on campus so they can keep the money and they don't have to share it with 31 other teams.
Yeah, I think that I'd bet on the Brady jersey being the most the one that is the most purchased this year, because you'll have the 20 years of Brady fans and then also the Bucks fans that'll come in. So I would bet on that personally, but it's the young guys, the rookies, it's always exciting, man, and it's face of the franchise stuff. So like Bengals fans, you haven't had a jersey to buy since AJ Green, right? Or mm-hmm. Dolphins fans, you get this guy who comes in and he's supposed to be the savior. There's going to be a ton of them. In terms of unretiring a number, it's kind of weird. You're right. It happened with Singletary. It's happened before. I'm not going to like get out of shape about it, but it is weird. Like if you retire the jersey's retired for a reason, because some teams like the Cowboys with number 88, they already said like CeeDee Lamb is going to get to wear number 88. Michael Irvin's in the Ring of Honor. He wore it. Dez Bryant wore it. Now CeeDee Lamb goes. So it's like this thing of honor to wear it, but it's not retired. Syracuse had the same thing with jersey number 44 that all the great running backs like Floyd Little and Ernie Davis would wear that number, and it was passed down to the top running back recruit, and then they ended up stopping the tradition because they stopped getting good running back recruits, stopped getting good recruits overall. So that's not the tradition. But it is a little weird to unretire a jersey for a guy, because then if he's a bust, what, it goes back to being retired until the next quarterback comes around and wants to wear it?
Yeah, that's a good point. And again, it's up to the individual, unless the team just says, no, we're not going to give you that opportunity. And for the record, the Bears never officially retired Singletary. He just had an issue.
Okay.
He had to ask for it. I think it was Shea McClellan had to ask for it. And Singletary said, sure. He should have said, can't do it.
Yes, that would have been better.
That's what you, the 19th pick who they could have picked up in the middle of the second round, can't do it. You're not getting it. I think it's cool when you retire a jersey, and I don't know if this ever would trend, but when you have two great players who've worn the Cubs did it beautifully with 31. I don't know why Jenkins's number wasn't retired before Greg Maddux had a chance to wear it.
Right.
But that's a great example. And you've got different generations of baseball fans. When they go to Wrigley Field and they see 31 whipping in the wind, you're reaching a lot of people with those memories. Len Casper's Detroit Lions have number 20 designated for three players. I'm pretty sure Lem Barney, their Hall of Fame cornerback, wore it. Billy Sims, a great running back whose career was horribly truncated from a horrific knee injury, and Barry Sanders. That number 20 means so much to three different generations of Lions fans. And to retire that into Patriot, I think that's a classy way to do it. If you can, but you got to be willing to continue to reissue a jersey. In the case of the Bears, the NFL strongly has encouraged them. They've not mandated it, but they strongly encourage the Bears not to do it anymore because at some point you're going to run out of jerseys. And
right.
I wonder what, you know, what would be the right number of years for a jersey to remain retired. The Bears have jerseys number retired where sons and daughters of the players are long dead. I mean, guys who played in the 30s, you know, I mean, I don't know how long you have to leave that thing up there before you reissue it when fans, you know, when Spiegs and I were in Boston in 13, we saw some Bruins jersey numbers retired of players that we hadn't heard of. We were put off by it, actually. Who the hell are these guys? And I know the NHL pretty well in its history. If you're a Bruin in my life, even before my life, I probably will know who you are. And there were some names up there that were like, what? What's that?
I just love that. I love the image of, like, I was really put off by it. I'm in Boston. I'm watching the Hawks try to win a cup, and damn, I don't know these numbers of these old Boston athletes. This is really upsetting
me.
Where is my chowder? Lobster again?
Yeah, exactly. I always have liked the tradition of retiring a jersey, but I think you have to have a willingness to be flexible on it. And I just think the unique nature of some shared numbers of Hall of Famers, and in the case of Jenkins and Maddox, you got two Cy Young winning pitchers, two Hall of Fame pitchers, separated, you know, by many years of their careers. Their careers never, their circles never intersected, and they were the studs of the staff. And I think that is a perfect way to recognize a number. And you give somebody like Greg Maddox, who came in here with a lot of buildup and a lot of expectations, an opportunity to wear the jersey number of a Hall of Famer and a guy who had six consecutive 20-win seasons in a Cubs uniform back in the era when pitchers were allowed to go much deeper into ball games and wins were a thing. That's a cool thing to me. I think that's about as stylish as it gets when it comes to retiring a jersey number.
Yeah, that is cool, and I like to be a little bit of an elitist. I know that'll shock some people. When it comes to this sort of thing, like, I like the prestige of it. So, like, for example, in college basketball, you can kind of judge the quality or the caliber of a program based on what they will deem in their stadium as being banner worthy, right? At Northwestern, they have NCAA tournament appearance banners. At UCLA, it's only national championships. At Kansas, you have to either win the conference or go to a Final Four. Like, they're not hanging Elite Eight banners. They're not hanging Sweet 16 banners. And so in the NBA, like, if you're retiring a Bulls jersey, when I say retire Derrick Rose's jersey, it's not, I don't take it lightly. There's only four of them up there. And if you're hanging
jersey
next
number
to Mike,
one yeah. is going to the Raptors. I nailed that.
And so after you, right, if it's Jordan and Scotty and Love and Sloan, and then you're putting a fifth one up there, it better be for a really special damn player. Whereas the Memphis Grizzlies, like, Zach Randolph is beloved. And so, cool, that's the only one that's up there, but he's the best player in the history of their franchise. Like, Mike Conley will go up when he's done, but it's just not the same caliber of franchise. So, like, I get it. I remember I'd been back here when Anthony Morrow was on the Bulls, and he comes in and, like, he gets jersey number one. And even though they hadn't retired the number, and even though there's controversy around Derrick Rose, people were like, well, wait a second. Maybe the number's not going to be retired, but if someone else on the Bulls is going to wear number one, it certainly shouldn't be Anthony Morrow. You know, like, so I do like just the prestige, and it can be kind of judged based on the organization. So the Bears, they've been around for forever. Early on, they retired a bunch of numbers. So, yeah, if you wanted to start reissuing some numbers of guys who were in the 30s for the 2030s, be like, hey, that number was retired for a century, and now it's back in circulation. I think that's a fine way to do it.
Yeah, and you could start with the numbers that were put on the shelf, not necessarily for accomplishments on the field, but because somebody's life ended way ridiculously early, like Willie Gallimore of the Bears, whose jersey number 28 is retired. Retired he was a terrific player for a couple of years, but I mean, he was he's a very young man when he died in a car accident in training camp, I think in Rensselaer, I think in 64, right after they won the championship, along with another Bear named Bull Farrington. They were both killed. They retired 28. And it was nice. That was a nice recognition for his family. It's been many years since. 64 is a long time ago. He wasn't the kind of player you retire with jersey number four. Put it back in circulation. Same thing with Brian Piccolo's 41, which was retired shortly. The Pittsburgh Steelers and all of their glory and, you know, four Super Bowls in 6 years in the 70s and a couple more since, never had a jersey number retired until 6 years ago. It was an unofficial team policy to never retire a jersey number. And I remember talking to Lynn Swann about this once. And I said, you know, this Andre Hastings running around in your 88, that just doesn't look right to me. He said, we don't retire numbers. We're about the Steelers. I want to see somebody, you know, who looked up to me, who thought I was a good receiver, wear that jersey number. That's more of a tribute to me than that number hanging somewhere in the corner of a stadium. But they finally, 6 years ago, came out and retired, I think, 8 or 10 numbers of some of their best players of all time. And there are some that are missing on there, but they got some of the obvious ones. Joe Green, one of them. Bradshaw, yep. Harris, Webster, Lambert, Hines Ward, Dermoni Dawson. Forever, they didn't want to do that. I think it celebrates the history of your franchise, but I also think comes a time, give someone else a chance to wear the number.
Guys, there is something I learned when I took a tour of the great Cathedral of Boston, Fenway Park. They had a very strict criteria back in the day for retiring Red Sox jerseys. You had to spend your entire career with the Red Sox, and you had to be a Hall of Famer.
Ooh,
but wow. They've since waived that. Ooh. After the passing of Johnny Pesky. He was so beloved. They retired his number, and then, of course, you had Pedro, David Ortiz. So they've become a little more lenient over the years, but I think that's a pretty good criteria right there.
Well, it's cool. Like I agree. I like the elitist side of it. It's like, if your number is going to hang in this building for forever and we're an old historic franchise, like, have the traditions and the guidelines to get in be really, really strong. And not everyone, because some places just honor the jersey, right? Like the Celtics have all of those, just the numbers are up there, but it's not necessarily, like, I think some of them are commemorative and then some of them are actually retired. KU basketball, like, if you're a 4-year player and you started 3 of the years, they'll put your jersey up there. There's like 6 guys with the number 13 that are up there, and it's like Wilt Chamberlain and Marcus Morris.
Didn't the Celtics retire Reggie Lewis's jersey as well? I thought they retired Reggie Lewis's, and I think, didn't I have a coke overdose? Forgive me if I'm wrong.
No,
aren't you thinking of Len Bias?
Reggie Lewis also died of a heart attack. I thought it was okay. My apologies if I'm wrong. I'll correct that. Yeah, let's.
I'm not 100% sure.
I don't remember the details. Maybe you're right, but I just remember just saying heart attack. It was like during practice, right?
I will punt on this one. I don't remember about the jersey or about if there was anything related to...
I guess it was coke.
Yeah.
It was? YouTube it up.
YouTube it up.
I mean, I go by Wikipedia personally. You know, it's always...
Wikipedia works. If Wikipedia says it was coke, it was coke.
There was litigation afterward. The Celtics were hot about attacks on Lewis. They threatened a $100 million lawsuit against a Wall Street Journal reporter regarding cocaine use contributing to his death. The Wall Street Journal had reported physicians suspected that cocaine killed Reggie Lewis. Okay, I'm not completely out of my mind here. So there was debate about it between the Celtics and the newspaper, and I don't know. But I knew that was part of it. Anyway, they retired his number. And he's a guy who died young, and as a player, didn't have the chops, didn't have the skins on the wall to get a jersey number retired.
A texter brings up a point that is, you know, related to this, based on what I was saying in terms of, like, the elite, and like it's reflective of the program or the caliber of the organization, what hangs in the rafters. Texter says, Danny, I've always thought that the Hawks banners touting Smythe division championships were sort of sad, especially considering what's happened over the last decade. It's a fair point when you see the iconic jerseys, like the players who are retired by the Hawks, and then you see the cup banners, and then you see division after division after division. It's the same for the Bulls. They've got Central Division banners up there.
Right.
It's like, Midwest ridiculous.
Division. Yeah. Yeah.
It's completely ridiculous to hang a division banner forever.
It's all we had for the longest time. You know, and then there's one that is not a championship banner in the United Center that means a lot to me, and that's the team in 1991 that won the President's Cup. Most points in the league. Same age as a lot of guys on the team. It was a great year. One of the best years in Hawks hockey regular season. First round knockout. I still look at that banner and have a tremendous amount. But you're right. But until you start winning those things, you got to hang something up there, right?
Well, but the Sprint Center in Kansas City, the only banner that they had up was consecutive sellout shows for Garth Brooks. Because they don't have an anchor tenant. Like, there's no team that plays there. I'm like, why not just have this be an event space? Like, why do you need to hang that banner? So, to your point of you have to hang something up there, in that case I would argue no. But if you say, okay, we've got a couple of anchor tenants, and before the recent Hawks dynasty and before the Bulls dynasty of the 90s, you had to hang something up there, so we were hanging up President's Cup trophies and, you know, or banners and division championships. But that goes to what you're saying with the numbers too. Like, that could evolve with the times. Like, when the Hawks said, they could have easily said the standard here now is Western Conference championships and Stanley Cup championships, and those are the and number retirements, and those are the only jerseys, or those are the only banners that'll hang forever, and then take the ones down and like put them up at the practice facility or something.
That,
I feel like that would be cool.
Center. That Sprint Center one, I think I mentioned it on the show before, but it's about as sad as the Orlando Magic retired jersey number. So, you remember me talking about this before? It makes me laugh every time. Number 6 is retired for the Orlando Magic, for the fans, a.k.a. the sixth man.
Oh, yeah.
And
that is the worst.
And did they retire Shaq's number? No.
No.
No, nothing.
No. Yeah, nobody. No Penny Hardaway, no Shaq, no Nick Anderson. But you, the fan.
Well, they have listed as Orlando Magic Hall of Famers Dominique Wilkins, Patrick Ewing, Shaq, T-Mac, Grant Hill.
Tanny, backing up to your Red Sox, the rule used to be you had to spend the entire career in a Red Sox uniform. That would have knocked Carlton Fisk out of contention.
It did for a while, yeah.
Yeah, because his number is there. He's one of the few guys who's lucky enough to have a jersey number retired by both teams. I remember seeing it in Boston when it was 27 and then 72 here, and I'm trying to – you said Johnny Pesky.
He was the one that kind of got the ball rolling on them reversing course on their jersey number stance, so –
If I had a landmark in a baseball stadium, it was called Pesky's Pole, Mackey's Pole, I wouldn't need the jersey number to go up. I feel pretty good about a pole being named after me. Wonder why they call it Pesky. But yeah, how do they call it Pesky's Pole? Cheapest home run in baseball, by the way. Pesky's Pole. You can
still cool to have it named after you, even if it is cheap.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah, that nothing to do with a cheap home. I think it's about 302 feet, and the fence is not even 4 feet high. In right field, right at that, right at the pole as the fence curves around. It's a bitch to right center there, but you pull it to right field. I've seen guys duck hook the ball. He does not get terrible topspin like you hitting it off into the woods the other day on your first round of the year, and it goes for a home run. Terrible, terrible.
I think I was standing too close to the ball. Lots of coming over the top and big fade slices. Man. I hit like 2 fairways all day. It's like, if you're walking and carrying, you got to be straight. Kind of got to be walk to the ball.
Really?
It was pathetic. It was just scrambling all day, all over that course.
Oh.
That was my voyage into the outdoors. Yeah.
Did you continue to hit the driver all day, even though it was?
I took a few 5-woods off the tee. And that was a little better, but it was just less right.
Got a 3-iron in your bag?
I took it out because I was trying to have the bag be as light as possible.
Okay. Well, substitute it for your driver next time you have a cart and your driver's not, hit the 3-iron. It's okay to hit a 3-iron. It's better to be 190 yards in play than 240 and dropping one taking your lateral.
That is absolutely accurate, but it's not anywhere near as fun. It is better, but it's not fun. The outdoors writer for the Chicago Sun-Times. We're going to talk animal recognition, and then Mac will talk about real things with him. Dale Bowman.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
Next on the Score.
McNeil and Parkins flashback. Flashback.
The outdoors are his first love. He loves to hunt and he loves to fish, and he's got 900 acres of property on which to do it in Pike County, Missouri. That'd be living, huh?
Yeah, if that sort of thing is your thing, I can.
No
think
worries
of
about
I
social
may-
distancing there. Yeah, you got 919 acres. I think he has. Yeah, I know it's not your thing, but
well, I'm just saying I could choose a different place than Pike County, Missouri, personally. But you know, different strokes, different folks. It's not the worst thing in the world if that's what you're into.
You have no desire to start pheasant hunting on your own property.
No, that's.
Do you know what a pheasant is?
It's a rodent. It's a varmint of sorts. Nailed it! It's McNeil and Parkins on the Score, where the segment is brought to you by True Green. That was the moment, live on air, 50,000-watt radio station in my hometown, where I realized that a pheasant and a ferret, very much different animals, Dan McNeil.
I forgot who I was talking to when I was talking about my dream of all that country vast expanse that Mark Burley gets to enjoy. 919. I'm talking to you. What was I thinking? Say, man, that's living. And then your pregnant pause. Yeah, I guess if that's your thing.
Yeah, sure. Sounds fine. Don't want to yuck another man's yum, right?
That's right. I'm not yucking yums today. I am all thing non-yum yuck.
Good. Well, I will not yuck your yum as we talk and welcome with the outdoors writer for the Chicago Sun-Times, Dale Bowman, kind enough to join us on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Dale, thank you so much for the time. What is the key to identifying the difference between a pheasant and a ferret?
Probably knowing what they are in the first place would probably help, but... one flies and one scurries around.
Dan, got it. Thank you.
It's good to have you on board. Danny's animal identification has become a bit on the show, as you've been able to pick up. Hey, I've been reading a lot of your stuff with enormous interest lately. Let's start with the 47-inch muskie with a 26-inch girth that weighed probably 40 pounds, caught in central Illinois. I've heard from all of my muskie brethren, if you can get on lakes and you can, you're comfortable with it and just go out with one other person on a boat, they are moving already in their typical pre-spawn patterns. Is that what you're picking up from most of the big fish anglers?
Yes. Now, it also, central Illinois is better than northern Illinois because it's been a relatively cold spring. I mean, we're running several degree days behind. But, boy, that was a hell of a fish, by the way.
Yes, it was. Not Eagle Lake, Ontario, but we're here in the Midwest. So, you know, I know the guys up at in Antioch near the chain, on the chain, they have been kicking ass lately, too. How are our water temperatures right now compared to where they typically would be here at the end of the first week of May? Are we about where we should be temperature-wise?
No, we're probably, depending what how deep your water is and, you know, color and all that, we're probably at least 5 degrees behind, I would say. Maybe some are now over the weekend, some of them bumped up pretty quick because when we had, two back-to-back 70-degree days. But, yeah, we're at least 5 degrees behind,
Dale, what is the state doing to improve fisheries, not just for what I like to chase, but for any angler? What is the state doing right now that's a positive that people can say, all right, this is a good thing for all of us?
Well, they're maintaining their stocking. That's probably one of the things that is good. And they really have a truly well-run muskie program. I mean, Illinois muskie are not a fish of 10,000 casts like they like to talk about in Wisconsin. If you don't get one in much fewer casts than that, you're probably need to work on your fishing skills some. I mean, it's a quality fishery. They're doing the regular stockings the guys are on. The fisheries chief just said last week that they have been maintaining the fish for the stockings. So we should be on schedule for that. We're maintaining the fishery on Lake Michigan, the salmon and the trout and all that. Maintenance is what we're really doing. And that and water quality has been the biggest thing that's helped Illinois fishing over the last 50 years has been just the quality of water has come up and largely a result of the Clean Air and Water Acts.
I was given an opportunity to go spring coho fishing on the big lake a few weeks ago, but I was uncomfortable with the boat. There were going to be four guys on it. I would have been a fifth. I've only been on the water once, and that was with my son, and we don't live in the same house, so we stayed 10 feet apart. But I was telling the guys on the show, for my money, there is not a better tasting flesh that comes out of Lake Michigan than the early spring coho. Would you care to argue?
No, I would not. That's when I would absolutely agree. The 2 or 3 pound coho that you get in February, March, April, that's eaten. I mean, you can eat them any way you want. I'd like to throw them on a grill, you know, with just simple, some lemon and garlic and soy sauce, and you're ready to roll. I mean, it doesn't take long.
We're talking to Dale Bowman, the outdoors columnist for the Chicago Sun-Times. We spent a lot of time on the show talking about the restrictions on golf, but there are also restrictions on boating and outdoors activities and where people can go. Do you think the restrictions have been mostly sensible, and are they being followed as you've seen?
Sensible might be an arguable word. Could I put it that way? But necessary, I would probably tend to say yes. I think they might have been overdone a little bit on some of the lesser used state sites. But, I mean, the big high volume sites like Starved Rock State Park and Illinois Beach, they absolutely had to be shut down. There's no way you could have had social distancing on those anytime we get a nice day. And, I mean, you see that in the forest preserves. Every time we get a nice day, people – just go nuts and pretend that nothing's going on. And, you know, we're still losing more than 100 people a day. So, I mean, we have a real problem yet that's still going on. It hasn't gone away just because the weather's nice. And I think sometimes that gets overlooked.
Yeah. And I'm guilty of it too. I think we both have, Danny and I both have admitted we've been a little bit lazy. Complacency comes, I guess, over after a period of time, but I buckled it back up this weekend. As far as what you can and can't do, how much flexibility do people have right now in the forest preserves? And whether you're boating or not, what is being allowed? If somebody wants to go out to a forest, what restrictions are existing right now, Dale?
Well, pretty much is open in the forest preserves. Now, on the weekends, they had to shut some of the more popular ones down. They were literally being overrun. And I don't know if you've been by one of the forest preserves on the weekend, but I saw that one coming weeks ago and wasn't surprised when Preckwinkle shut them down for the weekend several weeks ago. I mean, there are just some things that just can't do what we did in years before. For God's sakes, we still got our restaurants completely shut. You know, and so to think that you can go out and congregate in a group of 20 or 30 people sitting at picnic tables together, I mean, that's insane. I mean, what's the difference between that and sitting in a restaurant? None. I mean, I think the forest preserves have danced a very tough line. I think the state parks and stuff, just because of the sheer size of some of them, that I was glad they're reopening, and they seem to be reopening them in a fairly intelligent manner. There are things I could quibble with, but in the heat of fighting a pandemic, I don't like to quibble over small things. I mean, there are things that needed to be done, and they were done. I was stunned, though, when they shut them all down in March 15th. I'll say that.
Dale, Mac was very excited about your mushrooms column in the Sun Times. Where can people find these moral mushrooms? And am I Morels. Pronouncing that correctly?
Morel.
It's more of a fungus than it is a plant.
Yes.
I'm just trying to get my shots up here during this conversation, guys, okay?
It's moral mushrooms. Eat these and you'll live righteously.
Headline writers, as you might imagine, enjoy messing around with morels and morals and all that. So, I mean, they have a heyday with that. You can find them anywhere. Forest preserves, the thing about forest preserves, you cannot harvest them or natural areas. State parks, one of the nice things about the state parks reopening, or many of them reopening last Friday, was that it's prime time for morel mushrooms to be going. And so people were able to get out in it. Up here on our end of the state, it was still a little bit early, but there were some going. I did not find any. I spent actually quite a few hours looking Friday, and I didn't get any. I'm also half blind, so that's I have an excuse.
You know, I mock people who blueberry pick, because you can get a pint of them for $1.99 down the street at Jewel, and you don't have to stand and sweat in the humidity and heat to do it. But morel mushrooms, which are hideously priced, if you can find a specialty store that gets them fresh, that's something I would take on. If somebody is looking to go into this, this is something I'm going to do. Where would you send them, Dale, and what are a few, you know, easy things they need to know about morel mushroom hunting?
Well, there's a pretty direct connection between dead or dying elms. That's your best starting point. If you can find a dead or dying elm tree, you're probably in the right vicinity. The other thing is try and find somebody that will actually take you along. I mean, this morels is something, it really helps to have somebody that knows how to look for them. Because I know that sounds kind of insanely mundane, but to actually be able to stop and look for morels. I mean, when I was first being taken out 15, 20 years ago, I would literally have a guy say, "Dale, don't move." I go, "Why? Don't move." You know, very sternly said, because I was about to step on a whole pile of them that I didn't even see. I mean, they blend in. If you've seen photos of them, that porous brown, it just fits in with everything else that's on the floor. And unless you get the big yellow ones that look kind of phallic pointing up out of the earth, them you can see pretty easily. But your little brown ones and black ones, those you need to know what you're looking for. It really helps to go with somebody who knows. The other thing is you're looking for wood coming off. I have found churchyards can be very good because they tended to have elm trees around them. The problem with churchyards is often their grounds are very heavily managed with chemicals. And so you don't really want to take a morel from grounds that have been heavy chemical use on them, because you're going to be eating that. And I mean, that's to me the main joy of them, besides being outside wandering around, is eating morels.
How about store-bought? Can you, can you give a recommendation that is reasonable? I can't find them. The freeze-dried ones are garbage. No matter what I try with them, it never comes close to being the morels my college roommate used to hunt Mother's Day years ago, many years ago. Just tremendous. Nothing comes close to that I've had since.
No, I don't have any good recommendations. One of the guys that I mix with regularly, years ago, he used to have contracts with the chefs in Chicago, and he would get like $60 a pound if he was getting on them, the early ones. No, I don't have any good place to buy them fresh, especially fresh. You're better off, especially you, Dan, you should be able to find people that would drop a pound off for you.
Yeah.
You got a morel mushroom
let
guy.
Me,
I got a morel guy.
Yes. I guess that didn't sound right, dropping a pound off for you, considering the topics you two talk about. That could have other meanings, too. But
get a pound of mushroom. All right,
awesome.
Dale Bowman, outdoors columnist for the Sun-Times. I got a trivia question for you.
Sure.
If I'm referring to a black widow, am I referring to a spider or a snake?
Well, it would be a spider.
He's good.
Right. You're right.
That was the first one he missed.
Hey, I missed that. I messed that up. Inside joke for the McNeil and Parkin Show mob.
So it's a spider more than it is a snake.
Yeah.
I did enjoy the day that you got on pheasants and ferrets. I had me smiling at home. So.
Listen, if you want me to teach you some stuff, Dale, I'm available.
Yes, I do.
Hey, Dale, are you enjoying ESPN's Last Dance?
Boy, I tell you what, I forgot how much of my life was wrapped around that in some ways. I mean, I had just started stringing for Taylor Bell at the Sun-Times in their first championship season. So, I mean, I was kind of, you know, in there while all that was going on, actually in the office some. So, I mean, and just have personal memories of stuff tied. I mean, it was such a – I think the one thing The Last Dance has done really well is – captured how much of a worldwide event. I mean, it was a big deal. I mean, Michael Jordan was the world's. I mean, he was like Muhammad Ali. You know, it wasn't just ours. He was everybody's. I think I mentioned this to you. I had vivid memories of the second championship. I was working and we got off at 6 and it was a Sunday night and was riding bike home with a young woman, and we kept bar hopping our way home from Lakeview up to Uptown and Edgewater, and we finally ended up at some places, and they win the series. It's a Sunday night. We step outside, and there's people running down Broadway in their cars, just leaning out, shooting into the air, which is, you know, considering how many people live in Chicago, and they're shooting in the air, what goes up must come down. I think that's an old song, but so, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of things that went on. It encompassed a lot, too. And personally, it meant a great deal to me. I hate to see Krause getting – he's deliberately being presented as the bad guy, some of it deservedly. But Krause did phenomenal things for me. I owe him a great deal. I mean, I was just starting out, and he gave me a great story of fishing. He's not a great fisherman, but he loved fishing. And he gave me like an hour. He was in Cleveland in his hotel room, and I happened to get him to see if I could do a story. And he just started talking, and I started typing, and it went on for like an hour, and I got a couple pages out of it. So, I mean, and you know what? And he's a smart enough media guy to know that that mattered, that that meant something to me. I wasn't, you know, I was starting out.
Dale, it is great to have you on board. I want to wish you a couple days before we get to it, a great weekend. May many morel mushrooms find their way into your bag. And if Danny and I don't find any, we'll just have somebody drop off a pound of something. And we'll know what to do with it. Dale, thanks for the visit. Have a great weekend, pal.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Take care. This is Dale Bowman, outdoors writer for the Chicago Sun-Times, veteran Chicago sports writer, out looking for some moral mushrooms, mushrooms that will do the right thing.
I nailed it. I nailed that interview.
That was awesome.
That is prep.
All right. Let me ask you a question. Was that intentional? Did you do a Yurko? Did you say something on purpose?
I'll never tell.
Rascal.
Funny though. It was a little funny. I don't know about a moral mushroom or a morel or I still don't know what the right answer is. Black widows. It's fine. Got the point across. Dale Bowman for the Sun-Times. You fishing this weekend?
I am hoping to be fishing. However, I am way behind on getting my place ready for summer. Because I fished all of last weekend. So I think I'm going to be the member of the show who needs a lot of analgesic rub on Monday. Because I think Sunday I'm just going to commit to about 12 hours of work outside. I got a lot of work to do in my backyard.
Well, it might not be the best weather weekend, so not the idea, not the worst time to be doing that. There's a little bit of information coming out about the NFL schedule release. We will get to that because it actually will provide an interesting wrinkle for the Bears. So that's coming up. Plus, a really cool thing we're doing at 6 o'clock tonight. If you're a fan of this show, it's Mac and Parkins on the Score.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long.
Follow the action live or on demand. Track four games at once with multi-view mode. And catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.